If you've been thinking about getting serious with your money, like actually serious, now's the time. The Motley Fool is offering new members 50% off their iconic stock recommendation service, Stock Advisor. This is the same service that's crushed the market with recommendations that have returned 1,057% since inception, compared to the S&P 500's 180% over that same period. This isn't guesswork. The Motley Fool has a track record of finding companies before they become household names. So if you want to invest smarter and you like saving money while doing it, go to fool.com/listen to claim your 50% off discount off a one-year term of Stock Advisor. Again, that's fool.com/listen. Returns of 1,057% are from the Motley Fool's product Stock Advisor and measured against S&P 500 returns of 180% as of July 10th, 2025. Past performance is not an indicator of future results. All investing involves a risk of loss. Individual investment results may vary.
Court Appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, Indian Chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow beer and beer besides. He's temper all the times, the times I've tried.
Welcome to Court Appointed, Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And a judge.
Oh, and a judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude and a reminder to Mike of all his titles.
Sorry, I was a little distracted. I was trying to change a window on my computer screen to start our recording.
Get prepared, Judge.
I fell back into our old routine there.
See, this, you don't have to be as prepared. I mean, you have to be more prepared running the equipment now that you're doing it remotely from your own house instead of sitting here and I take care of that for you. You're on cruise control when you're here.
That's true. And also, it's a little complicated because we have to sync up our recording, so there's a bit more that goes into it. So it's a little tricky.
Yeah, there's more editing that goes into it. And then the week before when it quit in the middle, then I had four pieces to put together to make it. So that was interesting, yeah. Too.
It was like my phone died, so it's kind of like you were doing a jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah. I had two front halves and two back halves to put together.
And speaking of jigsaw puzzles, I wanted to say a special thanks to Patricia Ryan. She heard me complaining about the prices of jigsaw puzzles, how they're going up on Amazon, and she was kind enough to reach out to me and send me some of puzzles that she had done in the past. She and her son had done in the past, so I was very thankful. It was very nice of her.
Well, that's pretty nice that she did that.
She even sent one for you, Tommy.
She did. I don't have it.
Well, no, it's because you don't like puzzles. So I figure I'll go ahead and, you know, I'll do it for you.
You going to put it together for me and take a picture and say, here was your puzzle?
Yeah.
Well, that's my favorite way to do puzzles, so that's okay.
Well, it is of a train, so I figure you would like that.
I'm the train guy.
Yeah, you're the de facto train guy.
Yeah, as long as I don't have to work with them anymore, then I don't mind looking at them.
Is putting a puzzle together of one, working with one, too much?
No, I mean in real life working with them. Because I still wake up in a cold sweat of nightmares that I'm still working for the railroad, and I think, why did I take the job back? How much money did they offer me that I'm here? This can't be right. And I was watching a show. I can't ever get it out of my head. I was watching a show the other day, and it involved trains. And there was something they were doing, and I was like, no, they don't work that way. That couldn't happen. That's not the way trains work. Can't they get it right? And Mary said, you can't enjoy this movie, can you, because they're doing something wrong in there. I said, yeah, that's right. It's trains don't work that way.
That's funny. You have a nightmare. You're out humping the yard. And don't you do hump the yard or something?
Yeah. I was a hump train master.
Ah, okay. Well, it's funny because we were watching that show, Dirty Little Lies, that was on HBO, and they had a hearing, and it was just so unrealistic that I was complaining about it the entire time. Stephanie got really tired of me complaining about it. I was like, this is ridiculous. This is absolutely ridiculous. I can't watch this. This would be a closed hearing. You know, family court hearings aren't in the open like this. This is silly. This is absolutely silly.
It was Big Little Lies, wasn't it?
That
was the name of it, not Dirty Little Lies.
Oh, I can't remember which one. Sorry.
Yeah, it was Big Little Lies, I believe.
Big Little Lies, yeah. I get them all mixed up.
The one where Michael Kiwanuka does the opening show songs for it.
Yes, sure.
Michael Kiwanuka, you know him, don't you?
I do not know him.
He's a fellow Michael. I figured you must.
Well, there's a lot of us Michaels out there.
Oh, okay.
There was this place where I used to go get cheesesteaks when I lived in Jacksonville Beach when I was in law school, and I had several friends named Michael, and one day it worked out that we all went to the same place to get lunch together, and it was a place where you place your order, and then you give your name. And so there were literally four Michaels. It's like Michael 1, Michael 2, Michael 3, Michael 4.
So everybody was eating each other's sandwiches.
We all had cheesesteaks, too. So,
yeah. Well, if it's a cheesesteak place, what else are you going to get?
Well, oddly enough, it was actually a fish stand.
Hmm. Well, they must not have had very good fish if everybody was eating the cheesesteak.
They had really good fish, but their cheesesteaks were really good. So,
Better than the fish. So, you know.
Yeah.
Stick to what you know.
Well, speaking of meat and cheesesteaks.
Yeah.
I thought today's episode would be a good one to talk about Trump's Meat Defense Production Act.
All right. He's putting all the meat packers back to work because they'd all shut down, huh?
Which is kind of what I'm calling it. It's technically not called Trump's Meat Defense Production Act, but I just kind of like to have the nice ring of that.
So you want to talk about Trump's meat? And so his little hands.
The Defense Production Act was first passed in 1950, and it was in part as a response to the Korean War. So a lot of times when we talk about different laws and things like that, we talk about how things come from common law, and there's different things like that. And there's not really any clear common law connection with this. The Defense Production Act was created by the legislature, the legislative branch, and therefore it's strictly construed and gives certain powers to the executive branch, which are specifically listed in it. And they're very broad terms, so it actually encompasses quite a few things. But the most thing I could think this would be similar to would almost kind of be like a king directing that certain things have to be done in times of war or in certain emergencies, because that's kind of what it looks like to me.
Yeah, it's like he's... In certain ways, though, isn't he supposed to use that to incentivize businesses to produce something we need for the common good, either because of a war or a pandemic or something like that?
Yeah, it is.
It's not like supposed to be a club that you beat people over the head. It's more supposed to be a way that you can incentivize people to do something like that or make them do it.
That is true. Yeah. I mean, in essence, you could make them do it. I mean, there's different kinds of ways that the Defense Production Act can be used. There can be, usually it happens with voluntary type agreements, and that's kind of generally what happens. I do believe there can be some involuntary type ways it's done as well, but that's not really an incentive for people to want to do that. That's just kind of like saying, hey, you have to do it.
Well, it's like the ventilators. They got like GM and some of the other car manufacturers to make ventilators through that same production act, right?
Yeah, they did. Well, I don't know if they actually went through it. I know there were talks of it, and then there was some breakdown of the talks, and I'm not certain if they actually ever went through with it or not.
They just said they would use it, and then the manufacturers volunteered to do it on their own.
I think so. I think that's kind of how it went down. But it seems kind of strange. You know, we're the land of the free, that you would force corporations to fill certain contracts and do certain things. In America, we have the Constitution, obviously, and there's actually a contract clause in there which recognizes people's rights to form contracts and says that states can't get in the way of that. It doesn't talk about the federal government getting in the way of it. It talks about states getting in the way of it, though.
Right.
So.
Well, I guess it must have come about in 1950 with the Korean War, trying to make the meat packers make Korean barbecue, that we probably were cut off from the Korean barbecue because we were at war with Korea, huh?
That could be the case. Korean barbecue is pretty daggone good.
I know. That's enough to make somebody go to work for.
Well, since becoming law, the Defense Production Act has been reauthorized over 50 times. So the Congress has basically said, hey, this is a good thing. We need to keep it up. And it actually happens quite a bit, but it's usually in the context of for defense, like military type contracts and things like that.
Right.
It's not often that it comes to the domestic forefront like it has recently with the COVID-19. Now, the Act contains broadly three general sections. The first section authorizes the president to require businesses to accept and prioritize contracts for materials deemed necessary for national defense, regardless of the loss incurred on the business. This would be kind of the forcing them to do something if they didn't want to. The second section authorizes the president to establish mechanisms such as regulations, orders, or agencies to allocate materials, services, and facilities to promote national defense. And the third section authorizes the president to control the civilian economy so that scarce and critical materials necessary to the national defense effort are available for defense needs.
That'd be like the PPE that they were trying to get everybody to go through them all instead of bidding it and buying from all the different groups. They were trying to gather it all up themselves.
Yeah.
And distribute it.
Yeah, because they felt that it was more important for the government to have it and allocate it as they saw fit.
Right, rather than states outbidding each other to try to get it.
Now, the act also authorizes the president to requisition property to force industry to expand production and the supply of basic resources. The president can also impose wage and price controls, settle labor disputes, control consumer and real estate credit, establish contractual priorities, and allocate raw materials towards national defense. So it's very, even though it is something that is strictly construed because it's a creature of the legislature and it has to be only certain powers which are authorized, it is very broad and has been interpreted to be pretty broad too. So it's got a lot of open windows and doors.
So you can use it as you see fit or deem it the way you want it to be, to fit whatever you think it needs to be, and there's no strict criteria.
Well, yeah, and the purpose of that is because you don't know exactly what the national defense items that you might need are. Who knows?
Or how that would affect. Like in other words, it talks about fulfilling U.S. contracts first before maybe, you know, other commercial ones or something like that. So the thing is, and that would say, like, maybe the government pays less than this other commercial contract's more lucrative, but you have to do the government ones first, even though you don't make as much money as a company.
That's true. But there are some protections in there that require the government to pay pretty much what the prevailing price of something is. So they can't force somebody to do it for free, basically. There's no indentured servitude.
I don't think the government, though, has that much of a contract for meat with any of these meat packers.
No, I don't think specifically they do, but they can insinuate that they need to direct them to do that. And by doing it, they're granting them certain other kinds of benefits, which I'm going to get into a little bit later, and I think may have been part of the reason why the president went down this route with them.
Okay, because a lot of them, they were continuing to operate, considering themselves an essential business anyway, once the lockdown took place. But then all the people working there started to get sick. And they had like 800 people in a single plant be diagnosed with the coronavirus. And when you look at the conditions, coronavirus or not, it looks like a pretty scary place to work. When you look at how the meat is handled and all that kind of stuff and people shoulder to shoulder working in there. So I guess you throw a virus in the mix and it really makes it rough.
Have you ever read Upton Sinclair's The Jungle?
I have heard of it, but I've never read it.
It has a lot to do with meat packing, I believe.
Yeah. The only packers I know of is the Green Bay ones.
Yeah. I heard they just drafted a quarterback.
Yeah. I don't think Aaron's too happy.
Now, the Defense Production Act has certain things which I think are particularly applicable to the COVID-19 pandemic. But before we get into that, I think there might be actually a motion today before the court.
Why, yes, if it pleases your meat ship court, we'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
My meat ship court?
Courtship meat? I don't know. Somewhere in there.
All right. Well, who's on the docket?
We have on the docket our good friends at Care Of.
Care Of is a wellness brand that makes it easy to maintain your health goals with a customized vitamin plan that helps you feel your best today and supports you long term.
These are hassle-free vitamins and supplements delivered to you. Care Of can make taking your vitamins and supporting your health goals attainable.
Care Of's easy online quiz helps you find the vitamins and powders that will support your specific health goals, like improving your fitness routine or managing stress.
The convenient daily packs are perfect for an on-the-go lifestyle. Just throw one in your purse or gym bag, and you're on your way.
Caro's new line, the Skin and Hair Collection, helps you work on your beauty goals from all angles with a combination of target ingredients for hair, skin, and nails. As someone with a beard and a lot of hair, I like this.
It's quality you can see and taste. Care/of is focused on the quality, science, and research that goes into each of their products and recommendations.
I like their protein powders. They're made with real ingredients you can recognize, like organic cocoa and pink Himalayan sea salt.
Pink Himalayan sea salt. I like sea salt. Now, to get your personally designed packet, you take a easy online quiz that's short and convenient, and it answers questions about your diet, your health goals, and your lifestyle, and Care/of will recommend a list of vitamins and supplements specifically for your health needs and your goals. And they'll even put your name on it.
They do. And it's so much easier than going down the vitamin aisle at your health store or your grocery store. It's confusing. You don't know where to start. When you take the online quiz, you answer questions and you get recommendations. How often do you work out? Do you follow any specialty diets? Are you concerned about your hair, skin, and nail health?
Follow Care/of's expert recommendations or adjust your pack at any time. What you receive is totally up to you.
When I first got my packet, it was great. Individually packed, very clear, concise, and tailored specifically to me because I took the online quiz. It was great.
Mine too, and I wanted it to boost my energy, and I felt better all day after taking my pills.
You were boosted energetically.
I was boosted.
And right now, there's a special offer for our listeners who go to a specific website.
For 50% off your first Care/of order, go to takecareof.com and enter the code COURT50.
That's 50% off your first Care/of order. Go to takecareof.com and enter the code COURT50.
You can't beat that 50% off. That's about half.
I'm doing the math on it, and I think you're about right.
So get healthy today with Care/of.
Now, there are some specific things in the Defense Production Act, which I think might apply in our current pandemic situation. Title I, Priority Power, that's in Section 4511. The president can require that performance under contracts or orders, which he deems necessary or appropriate to promote the national defense, shall take priority over performance under any other contract or order, and for the purpose of assuring such priority, to require acceptance and performance of such contracts or orders in preference to other contracts or orders by any person he finds to be capable of their performance. Basically, what this means is the president can make a company accept a contract and then jump to the front of the line, requiring the performance under the Defense Production Act before any other contracts the company has with any other parties. So it's like, hey, this is important, national defense, and by the way, you're doing this now, we're jumping to the front of the line, skip, we're taking frontsies.
Well, I mean, they are, but more importantly, I think what they're doing is they're trying to find a way to keep the meatpacking companies open, because several of them have closed down because of the problems with the virus. And it's not that they don't want to work. The at least the people that own the meatpacking places, they want to work. Now, of course, the employees, they have their concerns because so many have gotten sick and some have died, which justifiably so. They said they felt they had to go in because otherwise they'd lose their job. So there's a lot of issues there that need to be addressed, both in the people side and the production side.
The Title III Purchasing Power section, this is one that you had touched on a little bit. To create, maintain, protect, expand, or restore domestic industrial base capabilities essential for the national defense, the president may make provision for purchases of commitments to purchase an industrial resource or a critical technology item for government use or resale. So this would allow the government to purchase and redistribute lots of personal protective equipment or different medical equipment, materials, and things like that, which we were talking about that previously, so the states don't have to try to fight over it and outbid each other. The federal government will get it and then distribute it as it sees fit.
Right, and some of these meatpacking plants may not have been able to get any if they were going to change the way they were doing business and outfit their people with this, they may not be able to get it because it's all dedicated to the hospitals. So maybe it took something like this to be able to free up some of the supply to outfit them. And then in addition to that, they get help from guidance from OSHA and some others about what they can do. The CDC, they come in and give them recommendations of what they can do to make it safer for the employees.
The Defense Production Act also has a loan guarantee and direct loan power, which would allow the federal government to guarantee or provide direct loans to private industry for ensuring the supply of different resources, critical technology items, or other materials. Now, this isn't something that's really been used much, but it is in there and it is available for the president to do if in case there was some sort of critical industry where we were going to have a major gap and that they need a loan to basically get through it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that ability too. There's also the priority power, which permits the president to allocate services and materials in such a manner upon such conditions and to such extent as he shall deem necessary appropriate, which, again, has not been used very often, but it could be used for different resources, like we said, medical care facilities, hotels, convention halls, large spaces for combating the COVID-19 pandemic. So kind of allowing the government to set up sort of triage or quarantine type situation area, which again, not anything that's ever really been used, but might come into play, who knows when, with the COVID-19. Now, the interesting thing is there's lots of ins and outs with regard to the Defense Production Act. As you can imagine, with any large federal government type law, there's lots of stuff going on there. And, it's not something you could just sit down with a cup of tea and go for a gentle read through. It's not written like that.
Well, and that's you can tell that by the different news reports and the different political sides, how they interpreted this act when they did it. They said, you know, that Trump has ordered everybody to go back to work and everybody must go in there. It doesn't matter that people are falling ill. He will come in and make you go back to work and all this. Well, that's not exactly true. What they did is what I understand is they said he is not making anybody go to work, but he is not letting the states shut down the meatpacking places because the states are the ones that have moved in and shut some of them down because of it. So they're saying that they can't make them go to work, but they're also keeping the state from shutting them down. And they're offering help and assistance in what do we need? If we're going to design this to make it safe, what do we need to make it safe? Here's the equipment that you need that we've deemed you need to do. And so they're trying to work with them to get the packing plants back up and running.
Now, whenever there is a prioritized contract under the Defense Production Act, it's known as what's called a rated order. And the contractor has to accept and fill a rated order and may place its rated orders to suppliers' materials in order to fill the order too. So if you get a rated order contract under the Defense Production Act, you can, in turn, place a rated order with suppliers of materials so you can fill that order. So the contractor can essentially order the subcontractor to do the same thing too.
So you get the if your business being priority, whatever it is you're doing, and you need materials from somebody else, you move up to the front of the line with them too.
Exactly. It goes straight down the chain. And a rated order takes priority over any other contract order, like we said, and applies to all types of orders. And the contractor must perform a rated order for the same price it would charge comparable non-rated orders. So again, they're not going to be losing out if there's certain kind of orders in the private sector, then they're going to charge the government the same thing. So it's not like the government's going to say you have to do this and you have to do it for a cheaper price. They're getting paid what the market rate is for it. So it should not be harmful to the different contractor.
And I guess that the suppliers, it kind of holds them to charging them the same amounts as they normally would instead of taking advantage of the situation and saying, well, you need twice as many for that. I'm going to have to charge you this to do that.
Yeah. The contractor can reject an order in certain circumstances. And here's the most interesting one. If the order is for an item that is not supplied or for a service not performed. So whereas the president was trying to order GM to make masks, ventilators, and things like that. That's not something they generally do. So, you know, it doesn't really fall under the exact purview of the Defense Production Act in this circumstance. Now, they could accept a voluntary one, I think, but I don't think they can actually order them to do it. Or they'd have trouble doing it because it's not something they normally do.
Well, that sure never was brought up, though. They kept talking about, why isn't he issuing the order? And he never did issue the order, but a lot of them came up with it and did it on their own. Like, I think Ford was the one that figured out that their fan, their cooling fan that goes under the seats of some of their luxury vehicles to keep the air circulating, keep your butt cooler, I guess, that those worked out just perfect to become ventilators. So they started converting those, but I guess they never were actually ordered to do it. They just came up with it.
Yeah, the DPA also talks about voluntary agreements, and this is kind of more what I think we've been seeing them talking about. And this provision allows negotiation between the federal government and private parties to reach mutually agreeable terms. And this gives the person contracting with the government certain protections and different kinds of things that help them. It's kind of a win-win situation for everybody. And I think that's where possibly this whole meat production thing came into play a little bit, because the meat processors and meat producers, they have a pretty large pull in DC. It's a big, mm-hmm. big business. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a lot of concerns with regard to different liability issues that these different meat processors might have had for having people come into work and possibly shipping out contaminated meat too. So I think there's a lot of questions there.
Well, it could be that. It could also be a liability issue.
Well, that's exactly now, that's what I meant.
Now that you know the danger, not just going out on the meat, but to the people falling ill or possibly dying, that's going to come back on them. And I think that part of this, enacting this, helps you relieve the liability of them continuing to work. Now the federal government has stepped in and said, we're making them go to work.
Now, it hasn't been definitively resolved whether or not these different contractors get immunity whenever they enter into something under Defense Production Act. Now, it has been decided in certain areas. The main one where it's been decided is whether or not there's immunity for breach of contract suits. So imagine you're a contractor and you voluntarily enter into an order under the Defense Production Act to become a rated order. So it's something that jumps line from all your other things you have to supply to other people. Well, that could in turn mean that you might breach a contract with somebody else because the government is essentially jumping line to go in front of you, in front of the other party, I mean.
So, yeah, like if McDonald's used real meat and you cut them off from getting any of their meat to be able to make hamburgers, you might have a lawsuit on your hands.
It is. But the courts have held that there is immunity for breach of contract claims that come as a result of from the Defense Production Act, which I think that just makes common sense. If the government's stepping in and telling you have to do this and you have to do this our way, then like Burger King,
that's right.
Then it makes sense you shouldn't be able to expose to liability for any kind of contract or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes perfect sense. Now, the thing it doesn't really hasn't been well settled on is whether or not there's complete indemnity for all different kinds of lawsuits. So the thought process is that if the government does order you to do these certain things, like for example, the meat processor, that actually may grant some sort of immunity or help the meatpacking industry not be liable for any kind of torts or anything that negligence or anything that might happen as a result of this. That's not something that's been settled by any kind of case law or anything like that, but it is something that could help them. And there is a strong argument to be made there that if the government is using the Defense Production Act and making you do this and you're doing all the things the government has told you to do and you're doing it appropriately, that you should be shielded from any liability for that.
Yeah, like if they came in and they like redesigned your assembly line of how you process meat, where they spread people out and they said you have to wear masks, you have to wear, you know, proper gloves, and you have to, when you leave, you have to do this and that, you know, and they lay out these guidelines and you go to work and you comply with those and somebody gets sick, they should come to your defense. But if you ignore that and you go right back to doing things the way you were before and just say, well, we like the old way, now you probably are not under that protection.
The other interesting thing, too, is that, if, for example, Ford making these different N95 masks, which were generally produced by 3M, if the government is telling you and you enter the into a defense production agreement with the government to build these N95 masks, those might have some sort of intellectual property type issues with them that they're, that 3M owns. That essentially you would be possibly abusing some sort of patent law or something like that by making these different kinds of respirators and different things like that. Well, the Defense Production Act says that the parties are entitled to immunity from patent and copyright liability. So if you enter into an agreement with the government to build something like this and it's somebody else's property, you're shielded from any kind of liability under patent law for it.
Well, that's as it should be. But by the same token, like, you should have to, once it's over, you can't keep making them just to make money and compete. You do have your immunity should end at that point.
Well, it would expire whenever the contract, your order has been met, essentially. So it doesn't give you the right to kind of come in and it doesn't give you any extra property rights by doing it. So
yeah, just forget everything you knew. You can't make them anymore. Forget the formula to Coke. I know we let you make Coke there for a while with our secret formula, but now you can't make it anymore.
I don't know that they would say Coke was an essential item. I don't know. It might be, though. It's pretty good.
There was a time I used to think that. Not anymore. I've switched to water pretty much.
I do like an occasional red Coke every now and then. It really hits the spot.
Yeah, I do too every now and then, but usually not more than once or twice a week.
Now, if the liabilities are not expressly contained in any kind of statute or common law, then the only responsibilities that the private party might have would be through any kind of contract or anything like that. Another kind of interesting issue that the Defense Production Act can bring up is any kind of antitrust liability. So if there are a bunch of different companies which all kind of bond together and start making these same items, in theory, they might be committing some sort of antitrust issues by having kind of monopoly on the whole situation. So whenever you have a defense production agreement, that is suspended as well. So there's an exemption for antitrust under that too. But again, that's something that would end at the conclusion of the Defense Production Act. But another kind of common sense type thing that would flow from the Defense Production Act.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because they might get in there and set a price together on what they're charging for it so that, you know, the government's getting the same price from everybody. And you're not really allowed to get together with other companies and collude on setting the price.
Yeah. So I think that the part of the reason why the president stepped in has to do with the power that the meat processing lobby holds in D.C. Because I think what this does is it helps prevent any kind of liability possibly for these large meat processing companies.
Well, I think they're stuck between a rock and a hard place because they tried to keep operating, which probably wasn't a good idea because they tried to keep operating without changing what they were doing to be safer. And they were, I mean, you were getting the whole plant. Everybody was getting sick. So they started shutting down and they were at the mercy of the states if the states shut them down. And then you start seeing the general public getting nervous when they're showing all these reports about there's not going to be any meat on the shelves. Go out and get all the chicken and hamburger you can right now. Hell, if they went that crazy over toilet paper, wait till you tell them they can't have a hamburger.
Yeah.
They're going to be running out and buying it all up. So, you know, that then you had all these people worrying about the shortages. So it's like, well, what can we do? And the meat packers threw up their hands and said, look, we don't know what to do. We can't seem to do anything right here. Everybody's getting sick. The state has shut us down. So I think that's kind of why he had to step in and do that because, you know, Trump's wanting to save the economy because bad economy with an election year doesn't look good for the incumbent president. So people can't buy meat and don't have money. There are going to be some upset people.
Absolutely.
When you don't have meat and money, you're upset.
One thing that health experts seem to think about in regard to the meat processing that would help prevent the virus from spreading is that they slow down the production line. And again, this is something the government can do to kind of help make it a bit safer. Because the slower the meat moves through the slaughterhouse, there's less people that need to actually touch it and be there. Because it was moving through really fast, you have to have a lot of people on the line. But actually, The companies themselves have spent years trying to increase the speed, and there was a federal rule in September which allowed pork processing lines to move at any speed. So they actually removed the restrictions from it. So now there's some kind of thought that, well, maybe allowing them to move these speeds faster and putting more people on the line was kind of a bad idea. So again, these are different things that are going to have to be put into place, because if you want to maintain these meat processing plants, you have to do it in a way that's safe.
See, but it gives these plants the means to get help to do this. They get people in that are supposed to be experts, and they can help design the layout. They can help supply them with the proper equipment. And then they can say, okay, if we comply with all this, are you going to shield us from liability if and when people get sick?
Yeah.
So that makes it so they can go back to work in some kind of general manner and not just have to throw their hands up and say, whatever we do, we're wrong.
Yeah. It's a difficult situation because there's the meat processing corporations, and then there's the people that work there. The people that work there, I'm sure, want to go to work and want to make money, but they want to do it in a safe way.
It's not worth your life.
No.
I got to go make that hamburger, but I might die. Nobody wants to die for a hamburger.
No. I don't even think Wimpy wants to die for a hamburger.
There are times I'm dying for a hamburger, but I don't want to die for a hamburger. But, you know, the other thing that gets into it, too, is politics. The thing is always, everything gets politicized these days, and that makes it rough. You know, when they were first talking about needing the ventilators, and they talked about that, talked about the presidential ability to force businesses to do that, you had businesses stepping forward saying, we'll voluntarily do it. And the press kept hounding Trump saying, why don't you enact that? Why don't you enact that and make them? Why don't you enact that and make them? You have that power. Why'd you bring it up if you weren't going to do it? And it's like, well, they're cooperating. Why should we make them? So now he turns around and he says, okay, we're going to enact that so we can have the meat processors work. And the same media people are saying, well, you don't care about people. You're just putting people out there to be killed. Now they're all going to die making meat. So whatever you do, you're wrong. Whatever politics, you know, when the politics get into it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And the sad thing is, depending on which news site you go to, you can almost guarantee what headline you're going to read. I remember leading up to the closure of the United States, basically, and the whole pandemic becoming really a big deal. I was going to CNN and reading news there, and it was all about coronavirus and COVID-19 and all that. And people were really upset and worried about it. You go to Fox News, there's nothing about it. Mm-hmm. It's all about how the Democrat presidential candidates are all falling apart, you know?
Yeah.
But then once things got a bit more serious, then Fox News started picking up on that. And I don't know, you're right. It just depends on which news source you're looking at. It's all politicized. And that's kind of one of the frustrating things about our different news sources here. That's why I always usually check multiple news sources to kind of get a barometer on what's actually going on, because you can't just trust one.
I do the same thing. I try to read articles from different ones and then try to form my own opinion on, because the real truth lies somewhere in the middle of all that.
The ones I generally look at now are NPR and the BBC. It's sad that I have to go to England to get some sort of unbiased news source, but...
Well, we know the bloody English wouldn't lie. They're straightforward, fellows.
Well, that's going to bring us to...
Legal briefs. We still have not been in sync very good with that since we've gone remote.
I know. I don't know how we do it. It's difficult.
I know. We do it all right across the table, but it's not as coordinated doing it this way.
Yeah, maybe one day we'll get back to doing it across the table.
Yeah, I don't know. They say that the new normal is not the same as it used to be. Everything's going to be different.
Well, the new normal is probably going to end up at some point being able to go to my family's house and see people.
Well, here's my prediction. Eventually, everything is going to return back to the way it was. I think all this other is overkill, and eventually we'll go back, because that's the way we as Americans want it to be. Yeah. We want to be in packed football stadiums and in packed malls and all doing Christmas shopping, all that kind of stuff. And you're not going to keep us from it, by God. We did it for a while, but we're not going to stand for it much longer.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions we talked about, not the part of the show where Tommy goes on a rant about whatever.
I'm an American, by God. I'm an American.
Whatever he was ranting about. So the first question I have for you is, what is immunity?
Immunity means they can't touch you. They can't sue you, and they can't charge you with anything because you have immunity.
That's right. And under the Defense Production Act, there is some limited grants of immunity. And do you remember what those were for, or what was not for?
For patent infringement.
That's right.
And for antitrust type implications.
Yep.
And for, I don't know, murdering your mother-in-law?
No, it was for breach of contract.
If you
breach a contract as a proximate cause or proximate result of a defense contract through the Defense Production Act, then you can't be sued for the subsequent breach from another party. Now, the one thing it does not expressly immunize or indemnify somebody for is any kind of tort liability. Although there is a strong idea that most likely these industries would be have some sort of immunity from this under the Defense Production Act. So, for example, like the meat processors, they might get some sort of immunity from that because of what took place, from any kind of tort liability.
So the meat processors ask the government, so you're giving us liability if anyone gets sick? And the government says, well, maybe. We're not too sure, but maybe. Let's just go with a maybe.
Well, I mean, there have been cases which have recognized these different kinds of immunity in other kinds of issues. The only thing is that there hasn't been really a case right on point for the immunity from different kinds of torts, like this meat processing situation. There has been some for others, like the contract and intellectual property and things like that. So there have been other cases where that's been the precedent that's been set. There just hasn't been precedent set for that. The general thought is that there probably will be some immunity for these different kinds of industries under it. So,
well, fortunately, this is not something that has often been whipped out.
Well, not in this context. The Defense Production Act has been used extensively with the military. Now, it's used quite a bit, actually. It's just not used a lot in the context of any kind of pandemic or anything like that.
It's just used in the normal course of business, huh?
Pretty much, yeah, with the military. The next question is, there's a freedom to contract in our Constitution. What does that say?
Well, I guess that means you can make a contract with anybody about anything, and the government can't tell you if you can or not.
That's right. It's the freedom of individuals or groups to form contracts without government restrictions. So
that's right.
But now, there are certain restrictions which are allowed, even though you do have a general freedom to contract. It allows the government to create laws barring contracts that offend public policy, like contracts like for child labor, things like that. Things that are, you know, just inherently wrong. You can't contract.
Well, you probably can't make a contract for illegal activity.
No, well, a contract for illegal activity is not is a void ab initio.
Yeah, that too.
Do you know what void ab initio means?
It sounds like it means it's no good at conception.
That's right. Void from the very beginning. So that's that was a bonus question.
Conception's at the very beginning.
And we kind of talked about this a little bit, but what do you think the reason might have been for Trump to find meat production as something under the Defense Production Act?
Well, because we all need meat. If we run out of meat, we're going to riot in the streets. I needs my meat.
As a fellow meat lover, I was just kind of curious what you might say to that.
Well, I'd go crazy if I didn't have meat. Now, I don't eat a lot of meat, but I need some meat. And what if you're a McDonald's or a Burger King or Kentucky Fried Chicken or something like that? What are you going to do if you can't get meat?
I don't know, man.
Be like when I got mad at Kentucky Fried Chicken. The one that we have here is worthless. I haven't been to it in like 10 years. I can't stand it. Every time you go in, you order what you want, and they say, oh, we don't have that. You want this instead? If you want to wait, it's going to be 15 minutes if you want to wait for what you want. And every time I go in, they never had it. And finally, I got fed up. And I said, you know what? You guys never have anything in here. You're always trying to force something else on me. Like, instead of extra crispy, you want me to have chicken livers. I said, instead of Kentucky Fried Chicken, you guys should call yourself Kentucky Fried Nothing.
Boom. Got him.
I'll tell you. Riley was in there with me, and she was so embarrassed. And there was a lady that was waiting there for her order, and she looked down at Riley and shook her head like, I'm sorry you're with a guy like that. I'm sorry that must be your dad, and I feel very sorry for you.
It's pretty funny. I don't usually see you get upset about things, but I guess when it gets to fried chicken, you get pretty upset.
When it gets to food and meat, you're damn right I'll get upset. I needs my meat.
I'll tell you the best place to get fried chicken in town, in my opinion, is Tower Grocery in Barbersville.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean the stuff they have like in the deli sitting under the red lamp?
Oh, yeah, it's good.
I never found red lamp meat to be good.
Well, and it's not. They don't even have a red lamp. It's kind of the theory, what you're talking about. Yes, it's kind of like that, but it's not a red lamp, so don't worry about it.
The one meat that I never could stomach, though, there used to be, when I worked for the railroad, this is a railroad story, when I worked for the railroad, we used to have to go out and do efficiency testing at night a lot of times. So there was this all-night truck stop that was open, and we'd go there usually to get something to eat 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And one of the things they had, you know, you've seen those roller things with the hot dogs on there rolling around?
Oh yeah.
To keep them warm. They had one of those, but they also had hamburgers on there. But they were hamburgers that were rolled up like hot dogs. So they would sit there and roll on there too, and you'd get a hot dog bun and put your hamburger hot dog shaped hamburger on the bun. But the thing was, if you think about it, do you know what a hamburger rolled into a hot dog looks like?
What?
Looks like a dog turd. Not appetizing at all. I never could bring myself to eat one of those. I always thought about it, but I never could bring myself to eat one because it was just like a rolling turd griddle.
I must be getting old, because just hearing you talk about this has actually given me heartburn just thinking about it.
Take a Pepsi AC. They say there's a chemical in there that helps with COVID-19. I don't know.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is maintaining healthy eating during a quarantine. Back at the first of the year, I had decided I was going to get back into my exercise routine and start eating healthier. At my age, it doesn't take much of a break to get completely out of shape. Getting back on a strict diet and exercise regimen, I began to make a noticeable difference. I had added more cardio because my replaced knees are feeling much better, so I started challenging myself on the elliptical about 4 times a week, in addition to lifting weights 4 times a week. Also, I decided that I wanted to quit alcohol for a while, so I was really starting to feel good. Then the lockdown happened. My gym closed. It became hard to go to stores, and a lot of things I needed were in short supply. Healthy restaurants all closed down. Apparently, being healthy involves not having delivery or a drive-thru. So if you are stuck inside and can't go anywhere for entertainment, what else is there to do but eat?
and eat and eat and eat. You know, this may come as a surprise to some of you, but pretty much everything you can order to have delivered or curbside pickup is not good for you. Pizza, subs, hamburgers, hot dogs, barbecue, ice cream. Yes, I said ice cream. It has been so bad, I had ice cream for dinner one night. Well, if I'm being honest, maybe more than one night. It's awful. I don't even want to eat this stuff, but what else is there to do? I don't enjoy it. I just cram it in and cry while I chew. All the hard-fought progress I had made is gone. Forget the freshman 15. I have overachieved on the COVID-19. When I look down, I can't even tell what shoes I'm wearing. I was trying for six-pack abs and instead got a six-piece chicken strip basket with toast and gravy from Dairy Queen. It's quite a turn of events. As for exercise, I have gone walking a few times, but that just isn't enough. Also, it is very sporadic because it has rained so much for the last 2 months that I am thinking about Googling, what is a cubit? Lifting granddaughters is the only lifting I get in. While it is more adorable, it is not a very good workout, except for the smiles I get from it. If we can't get back to normal soon, I'm afraid I will reach the point of no return, the tipping point, if you will. I will just continue to grow and never be able to get back to where I wanted, which is not maximum density. Please go away, coronavirus, and let us go back to being healthy before I start growing my own atmosphere and moons. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.